Attention campers, the new Camp Snoopy at Kings Island brings your family summer camp fun all season long. Head to Camp Snoopy with Charlie Brown and the whole Peanuts gang for fun and adventure. Race forwards and backwards on the new family boomerang coaster, Snoopy Soapbox Racers. Explore on your own with more space to roam at Beagle Scout Acres. And don't forget to grab a snack at Pigpen's Mess Hall. It's a new way to play with the Peanuts gang at Camp Snoopy. Now open, only at Kings Island, for the fun of it.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Bloomberg Audio Studios.
Podcasts, radio, news.
This is Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Messer and Tim Stenovec on Bloomberg Radio.
The next guest, well-known to the F1 racing world, well-known to those fans of the Netflix Drive to Survive series. It is so great to have here with us in studio, Gunter Steiner. He's ambassador of F1 Miami Grand Prix, former team principal for the Haas F1 team for, I think, eight seasons?
Yes.
Eight seasons. And as I said, he's here in studio. Hello, hello. Welcome, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Well, it's great to have you here. How are you? And first of all, let's go right to the Miami Grand Prix. It's coming up on May 7th. So tell us what we can expect, what fans can expect, and why Miami?
I'm doing good. And Miami, I'm ambassador for the Miami Grand Prix. It is a new Grand Prix. It's only the first season that it's on this year. And they came in pretty big, and they raised the bar in Formula One. Of organization, just how they do things, you know, just much more entertainment, much more activation, a lot more going on. So if anybody who wants to go and see a Grand Prix, Miami is pretty good because
it's kind of an event place, right?
Correct. It's an event. It's not just a car race. It's an event. There is different races, Porsche Super Cup, there is F1 Academy, which is the women racing series. There is just a lot going on all day. It's a sprint weekend. Sprint weekend means there is a race already on Saturday. There is qualifying on Friday for the sprint race on Saturday, and then is qualifying for the race on Saturday afternoon. So a lot of things going on, and for sure it will be an exciting weekend.
What does having a race in Miami bring to the race and also bring to the franchise?
I think Miami is Miami. Going there is always, it's a cool city, you know.
We got to do a remote from Miami, Carol.
I have done, well, I've been, yeah, it's a great place.
Okay. Yeah, exactly. You guys there. Want to go there yeah. as well, you know.
Everybody,
yeah.
Invite us.
Especially in the winter.
Yeah. Now, for New Yorker in the winter, you know. Yeah, sure, no. But no, for the F1 people, it's also, they do such a good job organizing it. Stephen Ross and Tom Garfinkel, just they put on this race somewhere, I wouldn't say out of nowhere, but the idea behind to make it around the stadium and use the stadium to host the teams in there, all the hospitalities of the teams are set up in there, and with the general admission ticket you actually can have a look at that stuff, and also you can get very close just with the general admission ticket, which is the lowest class ticket, the cheapest one, you can get very close to the cars. So it's pretty cool what they came up with.
Gunter, I think there's what, five Grand Prix races now on North American soil. So is there a point where it can be too much? Like, how do you think about that?
In the moment, there is enough in the moment, I would say. For the future, if the sport keeps on growing in the US, the US was the biggest growing market for Formula One in the last 5 years. Since Liberty Media took over, they grew it in the States because it was underdeveloped in North America.
Right.
There was only Mexico and Canada for a long time, and then Austin came in, and then Miami came in, and then Las Vegas came in. So I think in the moment they have to solidify the market here, and then we can think about the next race. But in the moment, it's not enough. It's the right amount.
Okay. Forgive me, but I have to ask, who do you think is the most liked driver in principle in F1?
The most liked driver?
Yeah.
Lewis Hamilton, I would say he's the most liked driver.
What about the most disliked? I think Lewis Hamilton, I mean, that's fair to say. He's a crowd favorite.
Is he a good fit at Ferrari?
Yeah, I think so. He's good. You know,
you
forgot about Danny Ricciardo. He's very liked, you know, as well. You know, so
can't have favorite kids.
Exactly. Yeah, you need to love them all. You know, so we love them all. What was your second?
I said, is he a good fit at Ferrari? Right, he just switched.
Yeah. I would say so, and I think he's motivated. He's now at the stage where he knows that it will be his last seat in F1, driving, you know, in F1. So I think it's every driver's dream to go to Ferrari at some stage, I would say. I didn't get to know any driver which has said he doesn't want to go to Ferrari. So I think he will fit in well. He's very good. He's got a very good relationship with Fred Vasseur, the team principal, because when he was up and coming in the lower series, Fred was his boss, basically. So I think there's a good synergy there.
I'm going to just say we are made smarter on this subject thanks to our Hannah Elliott, who you know covers our auto columnist here. But
no, these are all my original questions. Okay.
But one of the things we were actually talking about her with some other things earlier, and you know, she brought up this point of like, you know, how do you kind of create more parity? Like, you could often have a team that wins race after race after race in terms of Formula One, and we think about the Red Bull team, right, who's done really well. So are there things that could be changed to kind of shake it up so that you don't have the same team over and over, maybe taking top spot? And should it be done? Or how do you feel about the purity of, like, leaving it alone?
I'm for leaving it alone. There's a lot of motorsport where there is balance of performance. You put more weight in the car, so you reduce the power.
Change Formula the mechanicals
One,
or something.
Exactly. But Formula One, it's the best man should win and the best machine.
Even if it's over and over again.
If there is a rule, if somebody in the rules can make the best machine, he should have that advantage because they are the best. And I think it will keep on changing. There was a lot of things done that the field is so close together. If you think there is 20 cars out there, and in some of the qualifyings between the first and the last is 1 second. Mm-hmm. How much is 1 second? 20 cars, 20 different people, you know, 10 different car makes, you know. It's something amazing to have them in 1 second.
Right.
Obviously, it's not, I mean, everybody would prefer that every weekend another car would win. But I think in Formula One, that's not possible.
But
think about sailboats sometimes racing, right? Where they all have the same model and it's like a certain class and something. But you're right. Like, racing is, it's different.
It's the best machine and the best man should win.
Best team who figures it out, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, therefore they're the best.
But don't you think from a fan perspective or from the perspective of an audience or continuing to build that audience, it might be better for more parity?
It might be short-term better for more parity, but then it's becoming a stage sport. If you manipulate the rules, because then if somebody is not good, all of a sudden he gets, let's say, 50 horsepower more and he's going to win. What is the next one doing? Not develop the car, just try to ask for a favor to get him another 20 horsepower more. So it's not really, that is not really what Formula One is about. Formula One is about the best people in the best machines. I think in the moment we are a little bit, go back to Lewis Hamilton. He won 7 championships almost in a row.
Right.
You know, and Mercedes was dominating. We forgot about that period, but then it ended. Where is Mercedes now? They are fourth or fifth best now in the moment. It can happen to anybody. It can happen that in the next 3 races, Ferrari makes some development on their own behalf without help of any authority and catch up, you know. So that I think would be the best outcome.
And sometimes it's a case of, right, not only the equipment or the car, it's also the driver, right? So the combination, like you just don't know what plays. You mentioned women and women racing, and I'm just curious about the F1 Academy. How do you get more women out there in racing, and will the Academy do that? And what should be done to not only increase women in terms of racing, but also more diversity?
I think we start with women. I think with the F1 Academy program is started that it is not short term we will have a woman in F1. It takes some time. This is a new start to get women into racing, because normally girls, when they are small, they don't go go-karting. Boys, let's say I take a number. We've got 1 million boys and we've got 100 women.
Yeah.
The chance to find a talent, 1 million, is much higher than to find them in 100. So we need to bring the amount of girls up which compete in lower classes to find this big talent to come in. Having now the academy, at least they can see that they can get into the academy, and we create a momentum around. And even if the girls which are now in the academy cannot make it because they're already too old when they could get to, at least we create interest, and maybe their daughters get into go-karting, and then all of a sudden we get the pool bigger.
But it's got to start much younger. Yeah, exactly. It's got to start younger.
Yeah, they need to start younger, like the boys start 5-6 years old.
One other thing I want to ask you, because in sports increasingly we report on it here on Bloomberg, is the amount of money that's coming in from Saudi Arabia, Bahrain. The introduction into Middle Eastern money, into F1, is that a good thing? How are you seeing about it? And how does it change it?
I don't think it changes F1 in general. It's just like there is quite a few races now. There's 5 races now in the Middle East.
Right.
But otherwise, I think the Middle East is investing in all sports. If you look, they're investing in golf.
Well, we understand what they're doing, but you think it's okay?
It's okay, yeah. I think it's okay. There's nothing wrong with it. I think they are interested to invest in sports, and Formula One is one of the biggest global sports, so why should not they invest there?
We got 30 seconds left. What's next for you? We know Miami is your focus. What's next for you?
I don't know. The rest, what is for me, I'm in a good place now. If there's something interesting for me coming along where I get a good challenge and a good opportunity with a vision to go on the podium, I take it. Otherwise, I keep on doing what I like to do, and that is, I have a choice.
Another team, perhaps?
I don't know. I don't know that in the moment.
I'm still thinking about putting a 5-year-old behind the wheel of a go-kart.
You have a son. You can do it. I have a daughter. I should have, you know.
He's 5.
Well, real quickly, 10 seconds. How young do they have to start?
You said 5 or 6.
You did say five or six. So that's what you're thinking.
Small go-kart.
So it's really young.
Yeah. My kid can't even get a glass of water without spilling it. I don't know about putting it behind the wheel.
Gunter, thank you so much. Good luck. And good luck in Miami. Gunter Steiner, he is ambassador of F1 Miami Grand Prix.
Attention campers. The new Camp Snoopy at Kings Island brings your family summer camp fun all season long. Head to Camp Snoopy with Charlie Brown and the whole Peanuts gang for fun and adventure. Race forwards and backwards on the new family boomerang coaster, Snoopy Soapbox Racers. Explore on your own with more space to roam at Beagle Scout Acres. And don't forget to grab a snack at Pigpen's Mess Hall. It's a new way to play with the Peanuts gang at Camp Snoopy. Now open, only at Kings Island, for the fun of it.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. You need a company with extensive experience in specialized insurance. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and helping provide coverage that suits your needs. The Hartford offers insurance solutions that help mid to large-sized businesses, like yours, effectively manage risk, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. With extensive experience in underwriting, risk engineering services, and claims, The Hartford goes beyond the expected to deliver innovative, customizable solutions and service that your industry, that your business, demands. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Carol.
Yes.
You know what I love talking about?
Food.
Love talking about food.
You so do. He also loves consuming food. It's not just conversations.
Okay, but here's the thing. We like talking about it.
Yes.
Not just because we like to eat it, but also because talking to the people who run restaurants, who operate restaurants, it gives us a good idea of how the consumer is doing and, of course, what's going on with wages, with employment, with inflation.
There's a lot of input.
With food costs
and things, right?
I mean, it's really, really important. Red Robin Gourmet Burgers, mm-hmm. one of those restaurants. In the U.S. and Canada, there are more than 500 Red Robin restaurants, including franchises. The company, a microcap with a market cap of roughly $117 million.
All right, here to talk about the earnings, the business, what's impacting the menu, a lot going on, is G.J. Hart, CEO of Red Robin Gourmet Burgers, joining us from Denver. G.J., nice to have you here with us. First of all, how are you doing? How's the business doing?
Well, first of all, it's great to be with you guys today. I'm doing very well. And, you know, we have been on a path over the last year and a piece to transform this brand on what we call a comeback and the North Star plan. And we are feeling really good about where we sit today and excited about what 2024 will bring for us.
How's the comeback going? Because shares down about 40% so far this year. We're Bloomberg. This is the stuff we look at. This is the data we look at. What are investors missing about this turnaround plan right now, in your opinion?
You know, when we laid out the North Star plan, we said it was a 3 to 5 year plan. When you do these kind of transformations, you know, there's a time element. And in this particular case, there was a tremendous amount to do, of which we accomplished a lot in 2023. And I think in some respects, it's how soon will this happen? And you can't always predict that. So when I look at our results in 2023, at a 1.6% comp, we grew our EBITDA by 33%. We invested $25 million back into the business. We were able to add the kind of people we needed, managers, et cetera. We upgraded our kitchens. We upgraded our food. 85% of our menu has been upgraded. You know, I look at all that and say, you know, we are in a good place relative to where we thought we would be. And, you know, at the end of the day, the share price goes up and down, and over the long term, it will follow the right trajectory. And at this point, we're pleased with where we were in 2023 and where we are now.
But is it frustrating, or is there any part of your message that you feel like is not necessarily getting through to investors? Because it's not only that it's down still 40% this year, but you've got 20% of the float that's being shorted. So investors, there's a negative tone to it.
You know, in our North Star plan, the fifth point of the plan was we want to earn respect back of our investor base and of our analysts and any interested party on Wall Street. And I think the company's history, you know, has been not always achieving what they say they're going to achieve. And so we're working really hard on that. We think we've done a nice job communicating where we are and where we stand. And so at the end of the day, you know, is it frustrating? Not really, because we're in this for the long haul. You know, we see a tremendous amount of opportunity ahead of us. You know, we've put this forth like if you're playing baseball, it's a second inning. And that's not meaning second inning in a negative way, but in a positive way in terms of the runway ahead of us, the opportunity to take an iconic brand, a 50-year-old brand, and bring it back into a great place. And so, you know, if you believe in that over a period of time, you'll stick with us. And at the end of the day, you know, we know and believe that we're doing the right thing.
Well, you've, of course, I imagine, have done consumer research, and I'm just curious about the perception of the Red Robin brand right now, where it is and how it resonates with consumers at this point, and how that's different than where you want it to resonate when you're done with this turnaround. Give us the delta there.
Yeah, so you're right. We've had to do a lot of things, first things first, as we like to call it around here. And it really, some of the decisions made back 5, 6, 7 years ago, for whatever reason, you know, were things that definitely hurt from the consumer experience perspective. You know, when you get rid of bussers in a restaurant, or you get rid of an expo in the kitchen, or you don't have the same management complement, there's a lot of those things that you have to fix before you can really go out and with confidence and say, hey, give us another shot. And so we've done a lot of that work in 2023. Our plan as we go into 2024 is to bump up our marketing efforts. We think we're in a great position to be able to do that. And then right after we do that, we'll be relaunching our loyalty platform to be much more exciting and much more rewarding for our guests. And so, you know, where we are today, you know, with the results we achieved in 2023, we believe we're slowly getting people to say, hey, I'm going to give Red Robin another shot, but we've got a long way to go. At the same time, when you look at our overall consumer sentiment scores and you align that with the work that we did in 2023, we're pleased to see nice bumps in all of those levels. So people are starting to see it. But I will say that the frequency at a Red Robin had dipped down. So we've got some work to do. So people may not necessarily see it because they haven't been in for quite a while. So this marketing effort we've got going into 2024 here, and the loyalty platform will really address that issue. And at that point, we think that with our plan and executing at the restaurant level, that we'll start to see those guests come back in.
Hey GJ, how do you, there are so many burger places out there, and you know that there's more that seem to be coming out every day. So there's, I feel like the older guard like your own, and I understand like you guys are working on, you know, the transformation and kind of bringing it out differently, if you will. But how do you stand apart, or how do you differentiate, and who is the customer that you want in particular?
Yeah, so you're right. There's been a heck of a lot more competition. So first, let me address every one of our buildings says Red Robin, Gourmet Burgers and Brews. And so one of the things that I really challenged our team is, if we're going to have this promise of gourmet burgers, we've always done a great job from an innovation, flavor profile, what you put with the burger, et cetera. But are we really confident that we can compete in the sea of Burgerland today through all the different players that are out there? And the truth of the matter is, Red Robin had sort of fallen behind. And so hence why we changed our total cooking platform mid-year to a flat top oven or a flat top grill, which we believe is where you start with the right kind of burger to develop a gourmet burger. And so we made those changes. It's 20% bigger because it yields better, et cetera, versus having it cooked on a conveyor belt type mm-hmm. cooking, more fast food oriented. So we did that. And we feel like that really helped us to be able to compete in the gourmet burger space. And our guests and our satisfaction scores would tell us that that's true.
Hey, so, TJ, I just want to jump in because we only have about a minute left here. We talk about Ozempic and the weight loss drugs all the time on our program. How are you thinking about this new class of drugs being used for weight loss? Do you change the menu at all?
Well, first of all, we do have some items on our menu. You know, we've got a turkey burger and an impossible burger. And so we have some of that addressed already. But at the end of the day, I we'll have to see what the consumer ultimately does. Today, when you look across the broad spectrum, the drug weight loss whole situation, I think it's been slow to be adapted, and particularly in casual dining, because when people go out for an experience like that, they typically will fall back like, hey, it's an experience, so I'm not necessarily going to be worried about exactly what I eat. Now, that's not to say we're not paying attention to it. It's not to say we're not going to address it more so than what we already do on the menu, but we'll see. Yeah. I mean, it's definitely something we're paying attention to.
All right. Well, so appreciate you stopping by and spending some time with us. GJ Hart, President and Chief Executive Officer at Red Robin Gourmet Burgers, joining us there in
Denver.
Denver.
I would like a burger right
Denver.
Now.
Yeah, I would too. You and I were both thinking about that
yeah.
a lot.
Why not?
I had a burger last night. I would take another one right now. This is Bloomberg Radio.
Attention campers, the new Camp Snoopy at Kings Island brings your family summer camp fun all season long. Head to Camp Snoopy with Charlie Brown and the whole Peanuts gang for fun and adventure. Race forwards and backwards on the new family boomerang coaster, Snoopy Soapbox Racers. Explore on your own with more space to roam at Beagle Scout Acres. And don't forget to grab a snack at Pigpen's Mess Hall. It's a new way to play with the Peanuts gang at Camp Snoopy. Now open, only at Kings Island, for the fun of it.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. You need a company with extensive experience in specialized insurance. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and helping provide coverage that suits your needs. The Hartford offers insurance solutions that help mid to large-sized businesses, like yours, effectively manage risk, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. With extensive experience in underwriting, risk engineering services, and claims, The Hartford goes beyond the expected to deliver innovative, customizable solutions and service that your industry, that your business, demands. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Well, from U.S. sanctions on Russia to tariffs on Chinese imports to America's ballooning debt load, policies that touch the Treasury Department are becoming fraught with politics. All of these pose risks to the national asset the agency is supposed to protect at all costs, the U.S. dollar.
Yeah, so Tim, it's too early to tell whether the dollar status as the world's dominant currency is in imminent danger, but there's no question that America's privileged position at the center of the global financial system is increasingly being challenged by friends and foes alike.
Those words from an excerpt of Saleha Mohsen's new book, Paper Soldiers, How the Weaponization of the Dollar Changed the World Order. Saleha is Bloomberg News senior Washington correspondent. She joins us now from Washington, D.C. Saleha, congratulations on the new book, on Paper Soldiers. I do want to start at the beginning. How did the U.S. dollar become a weapon of war? What's the point that we can trace that back to?
There's 2 points. One, we can trace it back to 1944 when during the Bretton Woods Conference, finance ministers and economic officials from 44 countries around the world got together and by design crowned the almighty buck King Dollar as the world's reserve asset. But the other key point in the timeline is 9/11. The war on terror that George W. Bush launched did not start with military boots or a military tank rolling into a foreign country. It started with the Treasury Department action, with the White House and the president giving the Treasury Department the authority to use the power of the dollar to follow the financial footprints of terrorists who had undertaken those attacks.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting, and this idea of the dollar, the weaponization of the U.S. currency. So the impact of that longer term, what has that been?
Well, we've seen the homeland protected, national security interests and American foreign policy agenda and goals have been enforced through that. There are benefits to the U.S. of having the world's reserve asset. We have stable and predictable inflation in normal times. We also can finance our federal deficit and our home and auto loans at the lowest rate possible because we have the credibility as the steward of the world's reserve asset. But now we're seeing with the Russian invasion and the U.S.-led sanctions on Russia in response to the invasion of Ukraine that it's possible that the bite from American sanctions is not quite as harsh as once thought.
Interesting. So, like, you know what I find interesting is I feel like you've been doing this a while. Tim's been doing this a while. I've been doing this a while. Like, there's so many times where you hear, like, okay, the domination of the dollar, it's about to come undone. You know, whether it's from China, whether it's from other, you know, countries and so on and so forth.
Russia doesn't, you know, Russia doesn't want it to be the reserve currency.
Exactly. And yet here we are still. So I'm curious, in writing this book and in your coverage and thinking about the dollar, I mean, how are you thinking about kind of that narrative and where it is today and whether there is some point in time when maybe the dollar isn't the dominant currency?
Carol, you're absolutely right. Every decade or so, there is someone out there, or many people out there saying that, oh, maybe the yen is going to now be the world's reserve asset. Maybe it's going to be the euro. Maybe it's the Chinese yuan or Bitcoin. This comes and goes. The landscape now in 2024, as the de-dollarization rhetoric amps up, is a little bit different because we are seeing for the first time since World War II and the economic integration that launched in the aftermath of that, we are seeing that fragmented, that kind of coming apart with Russia's invasion of Ukraine and the U.S. having to lead the charge on sanctioning a G20 country. But what you're talking about is actually where I begin and I end the book. I end that we might not know if this is the moment that began true de-dollarization, because a lot of it just has to do with American economic and democratic strength.
Is this moment a little different because of cryptocurrency in any way, or is that something we can dismiss just right off the bat?
I wouldn't dismiss it. You know, one thing I do lay out in the book is how in 1862, when Treasury Secretary Salmon P. Chase talked about developing a paper currency, there were lawmakers who thought that that would be, quote, immoral to do that and not have currency benchmarked or marked against gold. And so you hear a lot of that rhetoric when a new technology emerges, a new type of currency emerges. So you don't want to dismiss that right away. But I don't, until you see a challenger that is big enough, liquid enough, and backed by a central bank and a government, until you see a challenger like that, there's really nowhere that the world can turn to outside the dollar.
But it's so interesting, right? Like, we, you know, we were kidding earlier about, you know, we're a capitalistic society and so on and so forth and free markets, right? But if you start to weaponize a currency, right, you kind of detach it a little bit from maybe the economic underpinnings that really determine its value. Is that fair?
You know, if you open up, unfurl a crumpled up dollar bill, it will say "In God We Trust." But really what the buck represents is the world's trust in America's integrity, in our free and fair elections, rule of law, the stability of our democracy. So as long as we can keep that strong, then no one can really touch the dollar.
Well, we've got a quick great question off there. You want to go here?
No, go ahead.
Okay, what I'm thinking is, all right, it's an election year, right? And we're all talking about it every day. It's now obviously factoring into every conversation, investment conversation, economic conversation, because we are assuming at this point it's going to be a rematch of Donald Trump and Joe Biden. So in an election year, how does the role of the dollar change on who's elected? Or as you talk about, the faith in the United States?
Well, when it comes to the exchange rate value, investors seem to think that Trump will bring on a rally in the dollar if he wins. There's been some recent research that's revealed that in the past 40 years, data shows that Republican administrations tend to have policies that trend the dollar in a weaker exchange rate direction. But I think what's different about those kinds of bets are that we are now, for the first time in a quarter of a century or more, seeing both parties, Republicans and Democrats, talking about rebuilding and fortifying the industrial economy and manufacturing sector of the US. And those kinds of inward-looking economic and trade policies actually rely on a weaker dollar policy. And we've seen, you know, in the Trump administration, it was Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin, and now in the Biden administration, Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen, both have abandoned the strong dollar mantra, the strong dollar policy of the 90s, and have welcomed a weaker currency.
Hey, we only have 30 seconds left, but Saleha, I just want to end the interview with the idea of the biggest threat out there to the domination of the dollar. What is that as we speak?
I think it's within our borders. If we can't get our fiscal house in order, and if we can't get bipartisanship in our electorate and in Congress, I think that's the biggest threat to the dollar.
Yeah, really fascinating, right? We make an assumption around it, but there are things that can certainly deteriorate the trust in it.
And we hear this complaint a lot from guests, but it's not necessarily playing into financial markets right now.
Not yet.
Concerns about the deficit, concerns about the fiscal house.
But you do wonder. Anyway, yeah. Saleha, really great stuff. Saleha Mohsin, she's senior Washington correspondent, Bloomberg News. Check out her new book, Paper Soldiers, How the Weaponization of the Dollar Changed the World Order. A really great deep dive and understanding of the U.S. currency. You are listening and watching Bloomberg Business Week, and this is Bloomberg.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Attention campers, the new Camp Snoopy at Kings Island brings your family summer camp fun all season long. Head to Camp Snoopy with Charlie Brown and the whole Peanuts gang for fun and adventure. Race forwards and backwards on the new family boomerang coaster, Snoopy Soapbox Racers. Explore on your own with more space to roam at Beagle Scout Acres. And don't forget to grab a snack at Pigpen's Mess Hall. It's a new way to play with the Peanuts gang at Camp Snoopy. Now open, only at Kings Island, for the fun of it.